Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to the Words on Flick show on eWater Radio, KEWRDB. Thank you for joining me again this evening, another Thursday of chit chat on Words on Flicks with me, your host, Janine Coveney. So I decided to make this evening the last show of the year before the holidays. I just figured, you know, it's December, it's the holidays. Next week, you know, you're going to be deep into your, maybe your travel plans, wrapping up work, you know, vacationing, meeting with family, shopping, eating. You're not going to want to listen to me. And frankly, I'm going to be doing some of those things myself. You know, I might even be wassailing. Whatever wassailing is, but it goes with the holidays. Anyway, so being that this will be the last show of the year, it'll just give me a little bit of time to, you know, tweak what I want to do with Words and Flicks for the new year. So I'll be back on January 3rd in 2019, and I'll give you plenty of notice on social media ahead of time. So relax, enjoy. And but tonight, since this is the last show of 2018, I wanted to spend a little time talking about some of the films that I really liked this year. Of course, it's impossible to see every film that comes out. And, you know, we're in the middle of December. And at this time, all the various critics associations and all the major, you know, screen academies are already revealing the nominations for their awards, or they're actually naming winners in various categories for movies and acting awards and things like that. And of course, the media outlets are likewise doing their top 10 lists for the year. And I remember all those years at Billboard magazine, we were always writing the top 10 for the end of the year before the end of the year had even arrived. And that's part of the problem that I find, like, you know, with this process, most of the common folk like you and me, you know, we're fans. We haven't really gotten to see all the movies released during the year because we didn't have time, or we didn't have the inclination, because everything that hit the theater wasn't something that interested us. And that's certainly true of me. I can't say that I've seen every movie that hit the theater this year. And I feel like, you know, I saw most, I'd say I saw about 80% of the movies that I really wanted to see. There were a few that escaped me. But the other part of it is, you know, I couldn't have seen all the movies I wanted to see anyway, because I don't live in a major market. And so, you know, the films were in limited release. Or the truth is, it's December, and a lot of the big tentpole movies, you know, they wait till the holidays. So that means Christmas. So there's still a bunch of movies that I'd like to see that still aren't out. So you've already heard me talk about If Beale Street Could Talk, the Barry Jenkins adaptation of the James Baldwin novel, which I really want to see. I might have to go to New York to check it out, which isn't a bad idea. It would be great to take just like a movie going trip, like go to New York and just like hit all the theaters and see a bunch of things over the weekend. And I might actually do that, because If Beale Street Could Talk isn't going to go wide here until January. So, you know, I'd have to wait. So the other thing is there's a bunch of movies that I still want to see. So just this weekend is the English costume comic drama, The Favorite, about Queen Anne and her relationship with two women in her court, which is getting great reviews. And then there's the Eastwood movie, The Mule. And then I'm hearing great things about the animated Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And that's just this weekend. Maybe I'll see Mary, Queen of Scots. I don't know. But then, you know, later this month, we still have Mary Poppins Returns, Aquaman, which has gotten really good reviews, previews. Then there's the Ruth Bader Ginsburg story On the Basis of Sex, which talks about how, you know, one of our Supreme Court justices really made a name for herself in the 70s with a major case. Then there's the Dick Cheney story, Vice, which I think will be kind of fun to see. It'll probably be very eye-opening about the insider politics in the White House. But just to see Christian Bale totally transform himself into Cheney, that's got to be worth seeing. And then Vox Lux, which I think I mentioned before, which is a story about a pop star. Still, that's still to come before the end of 2018. Then, yeah, maybe I'll take a look at Welcome to Marwen. That looks a little weird. I don't know. And Stan and Ollie about the 1940s comic duo Laurel and Hardy. So, you know, still a lot of stuff to see before the end of the year. So that makes it hard if you want to put together a top 10 list to include everything, because there's still great stuff to see and it might knock out something on my top 10 list. But, you know, I know that I'm still not going to go to the theater to see Mortal Engines. I don't know, maybe it's good, but not interested. Bumblebee or Jennifer Lopez in Second Act. I don't know. I like J-Lo. I want to support her, but I don't, you know, I feel like with most movies, the previews tell the whole story, so you can kind of predict what's going to happen. So we'll see. And then there's Holmes and Watson. So if you like Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, maybe that's the comedy that you want to see. I don't know. So for the movies that I have seen so far this year, it was kind of tough to come up with 10, I tell you the truth. I mean, I saw some great movies, but some of them I just kind of liked, didn't love. I don't know. So let me go through them quickly. I do have a guest this evening, and I want to get to her, but I also wanted to make sure, since this is the last show, that I got to kind of mention some of these movies, and you've seen them. So I want to say that they're not in any particular order, but they kind of are. So number one, top 2018 movie picks for Janine, Words on Flicks, Black Panther, of course. So everything that could be said about this movie has already been said by others way more eloquently than I. I didn't actually blog about it because there was so much on the internet and so much, you know, rah-rah about the movie that I didn't write about it. But, you know, it's so original. It's got an infusion of African culture showing up in the tribes united in Wakanda. It's got strong female characters. It's got a great hero's journey. And it talks about today's politics, and it's got a fascinating villain and Killmonger and so much more. So Black Panther, it's already won the African American Film Critics Association list of award winners. So number two is I got to see Amazing Grace. Whoa, to see a young Aretha Franklin at the height of her powers. She's performing live in front of, you know, a live audience in Los Angeles in the church, singing gospel favorites. I mean, you can't, it's just revelatory. Like, you will undergo your own spiritual conversion. You will have faith after you see Amazing Grace. Okay, so number three, The Wife. I just saw this the other day. Glenn Close is amazing. Jonathan Pryce, really good. A long married couple who come unraveled during the course of this one weekend. I won't talk about it that much here because I've got a lot to get through. But The Wife is like one of the best things I've seen this year. Blind Spotting, which I really, really liked. I know some top tens talk about Sorry to Bother You, which I thought it was good. It was original, it was a little out there, but I liked Blind Spotting a lot more. It felt a little more real to me. So that's number four. Number five, The Hate U Give. Amazing. Amanda Stenberg, what she gives us in her performance and all the themes of the movie of, you know, what it is to straddle cultures for young Black people today, to code switch and to, you know, just rise up and speak out for yourself against institutional racism. I mean, the movie is amazing. Number six, Widows. So Viola Davis gives a really great performance as a complicated woman who's really got to test her mettle intellectually and physically to survive. Great. I could watch Viola Davis read the phone book. I've said this before. Number seven, A Star is Born. I really love this story. I thought it was going to be a hackneyed remake, but Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga really drew me in. Well done. Bad Times at the El Royale. Again, it's about the performances. Jeff Bridges and Cynthia Erivo. Amazing. And together, they're the soul of this movie, which is like a neo-noir movie. Number nine, Black Klansman. I actually ended up seeing this movie about four times. Not really because I planned to, but I just wound up going with different people. And every time I saw it, I saw something new in it. And I thought, wow, this is a really good, strong movie and brave for the characters. So number 10, Don't Judge Me, Mamma Mia, here we go again. Okay, I'm an ABBA fan, so I put it on the list because it was fun. I had fun at the movies. I sang, I laughed, Cher showed up, so I'm happy with it. And then I'm just going to add as a coda two films that I enjoyed, even though they were controversial for their portrayal of racial stereotypes and white saviors, Green Book and Isle of Dogs. So in Green Book, I've already mentioned Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali are two of the best actors in film today. And, you know, what they do with the script, you know, given the script, is amazing. And Isle of Dogs, I just like what Wes Anderson does with his animated features. And it does have a somewhat complicated plot, and all of the human characters, most of them speak Japanese, so that might be a little off-putting. And then there is a young white American character who's kind of like comes in and saves the day. But the characterization's awesome. So that's just a little shout out. What can I say? I'm forgiving and eclectic in my taste. Okay, so that took a little longer than I thought. Hey, fight me, dispute me, send me a message about my top 10 on my Facebook page, Words on Flicks, or at JaneneC@wordsonflicks.com. So I finally get to the star of the evening, my guest, Miss Esther Austin. And I'm going to say a little bit about her. She has such a long resume. Again, I get into these flowery introductions. But let me just say, Ms. Esther Austin, she does so much in terms of publishing, media, broadcasting, transformational coaching, fashion, styling, so much more. Her reach is international, but she's based in London, England. And Esther is totally interested in helping everyone become their best selves. She's been called the 60-second soul liberator because she gets to the heart and root of problems fast, whether she's interviewing world-renowned music artists or other celebrities, or whether she's dealing with clients. Her motto is, it's not easy, but it's certainly possible when it comes to transforming lives. And she's coming to eWater Radio in the new year with her own show, On the Sofa with Esther. And so I want to welcome Ms. Esther Austin. And here we go. Esther?
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Hi.
Welcome. Hi. Listen, I am so grateful that you decided to come on the show, because tell people who are listening what time it is where you are.
I know. It's 2:15 in the morning, and I've literally just gone to bed because I'm actually in Birmingham at the moment. I came up from London this morning because I went to see Martha Reeves and the Vandellas perform at the O2.
Oh, wow.
It was a fantastic performance, and I am just kind of ready to hit the sack.
Well, look, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts and telling us what you do. So you have so many things going on, Esther, and I think people here in America may only be partially aware, or maybe it's just me. I'm partially aware of what you do, so I'm not really sure where to start. So it's Esther Austin Global is the name of your company, and you offer a number
That's right.
of services and informational media. So how did you come to establish this brand, and tell us what you do?
Okay. I established the brand. I've been working in my business, I would say, for about the past 10, 12 years. You know, sometimes when you start out, you think you're going down one avenue, and then that doesn't work, and you try another avenue, and that doesn't quite work. But you keep going because there's something within you that knows that your passion and your purpose is to serve humanity in some way. And
yes.
I would say the past 2 years, more so than ever, the media started to really hurdle forward more than all the other things I've been putting my hand to. So at the moment, out of all those things you mentioned, Janine, the two things that I'm really focused on at the moment are the media and also the personal styling. The fashion, I've sort of put on semi-hold until next year because that's going to take a lot more time, focus, and energy. The media consists of a magazine that I created in August 2017. I published the first issue of my magazine called Turning Point, Your Lifestyle, Your Wellbeing. And that is for individuals who are at the crossroads of their life and who are looking for content, inspiring content of other people's journeys, other people's stories, and all those sort of different variants to say that no matter what you go through, no matter where you've been, no matter how old you are or gender, you know, if you come to that crossroads of your life, you know, there's still an opportunity for you to achieve whatever dream you have. And the other side of the media is, like I said, informational media at the moment, where I go out and I conduct reviews and previews of shows, artists. And for me, I'm just learning so much about, I would say, old school, classic legend artists, because when you read their stories and you understand sometimes what they have been through and yet they have to get up on stage and perform, you know, you're going to come out of your sort of feeling slightly victimized and sorry for yourself, say, wow, if they can do it, so can I. So that's
Absolutely.
The media side. And in between that and the personal styling is the healing side. I was born with the gift of healing, foresight, and insight. I mean, we all innately have that capacity. It's, you know, it's how it's nurtured. And with the readings and the healing, it's about allowing people to tap into sometimes those places that they are fearful to reach into, those places where they've closed down to and shut down to because of their trauma or pain. And then I come along and I give an insight into what's gone on before, what's gone on in their life now, and support them in facing what they have to face without judgment and given them tools and techniques in terms of how they can move forward from that place.
That's
So in a nutshell,
fascinating to me. Is
that
kind of like a therapist approach, or is it more, you say it's like intuitive healing, so are you just kind of listening to where they're coming from and saying, because you have an outsider's view, you're able to see what they can't see? How does that work?
Okay, how that works, in the church they call it the gifts of the spirit, because my father, you know, was very strong with that in the church. So it's coming from a sort of therapeutic, a therapist's perspective, but also from an energy healing perspective, if that's making sense. So I'll expand on that a little more. So what I'm able to do is to be able to get a sense of what someone is feeling, where their pain is, and then to deliver that message to them. Is that making sense at the moment?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then I combine that, because I'm a qualified coach and I've also a qualified hypnotherapist. I do regression therapy. And so I combine it with the therapies and the intuitive perspective. And what that enables or empowers me to do is to look at the client from a 360-degree perspective. I'm very sensitive to pain, so I can feel people's pain. I can sense what's gone on in their life before and what's going on in their life, and also the triggers or the situations or people around that may be contributing to creating what this person is experiencing. And then what I do, I offer tools to empower them to find their own answers, to take responsibility for their part in whatever they're going through, and then show them the road to freedom, so to speak, you know, that there is a way out of this. And I will always go back to my strap line: it's not easy, but it's possible.
Girl, we need more of you. We need those skills. You know, everybody needs that. And I would imagine that kind of intuitive sense that you have about people is really helpful when you're interviewing others, because doing interviews is challenging. You know, you're throwing questions and you're getting answers, but I think the best interviewers, and I certainly don't count myself among them, but I know that the best interviewers can really read into their subject and see where they want to go further and what excites them in their answers, so you can kind of give them the interview that they really want to give.
Yeah, you're right. How I usually say it is that I just allow divine inspiration to flow through me. And, you know, once I step out of the way, then I get this sort of download of divine inspiration. And in that space, the right questions are asked at the right time. Because I must admit, naughtily, sometimes, because I can be sometimes so busy, I don't always get time to do a brief or do research for some of my interviewees. And that's not often, but sometimes that happens. And so all I do when I'm in that space is just to allow, I would say, divine inspiration to flow through me. And whatever questions come through me are always sort of relevant and valid for that person.
Do you also work with animals?
Yes, I do. I do. Animal communication. That was really fascinating, Janine, because about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I had quite a stressful time because my mother passed from cancer and I was dealing with a lot of stuff. Mm. And I just decided, I just said, you know, I just need to just go. I just need to go wherever go means. And I went to India and I realized that I would be standing up and all these animals like dogs and cats would come and sit by my feet. And I'm like, I felt like the Piped Piper. And I realized I was able to pick up a lot of what they were feeling. And it was, I came back to London and I was doing a reading for someone over the phone. And she said to me, can you tell me what's going on with my horse? I'm like, wow. And I picked up the energy of the horse and the pain it was in and all those sort of variables. And she was able to confirm everything that I had shared with her. And because I'd never worked with animals before, I said to her, can I come up to Leicester, which is out of London, to actually see this horse? And as soon as I walked into the stables, Janine, I knew which horse it was, because from the description of what I had seen in my mind's eye about how the horse held its head, its eyes, all that sort of description, I was able to identify the horse. And we took it outside into the fields, and I just ran my hand over its body, and I was able to pick up and read what he had been through, what he was suffering from, and she was able to confirm all of that. And the beauty about that process, Janine, is that it enables and empowers owners to understand their animals better, because sometimes when they have behavioral problems, it's because they are either picking up something about what's going on in the household, or there's stuff that they are actually experiencing themselves, but they obviously can't communicate that to their owners.
Right. That is amazing. I would imagine that it gets wearing on you, Esther, to be almost empathic in this way.
It is. I guess I would say I'm a bit of a lone wolf most of the times. I mean, I enjoy my company. I guess I was like this from a child. I'll just wander off and do my own thing, and especially into nature, because I can pick up and feel people's pain. I mean, this whole thing around homelessness, especially now, it's very, very cold in London, Janine, and there are people on the streets, and sometimes I can feel my inside screaming because I can feel their pain. And so what I do to sort of mitigate that in a way is I have lots of baths, like Epsom salt baths, to help cleanse the energy in Himalayan salt. And I sort of keep myself to myself because sometimes it is hard. And when I, you know, there are ways to manage it, and I try to manage it as best as I can. But I am getting a lot more sensitive as I'm getting older. And the more also that I grow within my own spiritual path and within my own spiritual self, the more sensitive I've become. So I've got little tools that can help to manage that. And one of them is dancing as well, because dancing helps me to release and to let go and to go really crazy and just exhale.
That makes me smile because I love dancing as well. And I don't get to do it as often as I would like, but you know, the most freedom I think I've ever felt is on the dance floor, just letting loose.
Yes.
So I relate
definitely.
To that, certainly. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
How were you as a child? Is this what you wanted to grow up to do? You said that you know, like many of us, we start on one path and then we find ourselves somewhere else. Where did you grow up? How did you grow up?
Okay, I was brought up in London, in Willesden. I'm the eldest of, well, there were three of us. There are two now. I lost a younger sister to breast cancer about 12 years ago. She was 38
at the time. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, there was just the three of us, and I was brought up in quite a strict Christian environment. You know, all we knew was church, and more church, and more church. And what I'm realizing that church is different from church. Well, church in the UK is different from church in the States. And I remember as a child sometimes sitting in church trying to understand this whole thing of scarcity and sickness, because that's all I really saw in the church. And I remember sort of talking to God and saying, I don't understand this correlation. You know, they always used to talk about the man in the outside world with his riches. And he said, well, I don't understand. How come you guys can't be rich? How come you guys can't be in a place of abundance? And then I guess I started to sort of see the world through not only a child's eyes, but the eyes of a healer, Janine. And as I grew up, I realized that, because you know something, obviously when you are you don't realize that you are picking up things, that you feel things, you sense things, you just think it's normal. But I was always a very perceptive and intuitive child. And as I grew up, I always had a heart for people, because my aunt used to say you're a real idiot, because I always used to mess around, but I was always very giving and very loving and very very mindful of people and very caring, and always having a sense of feeling how they were feeling. And I guess as I grew older, I was never one. My late sister was more the academic. You know, she learned by route. Sorry, you know, she could sit in a classroom and listen to, you know, days on end to being taught. Whereas I was very creative and I used to daydream. And I remember in my school report they had said that Esther has a tendency to be lazy. No, Esther wasn't lazy. Esther was bored. But I always knew that there was something deeper and bigger inside of me, Janine, and especially when family used to put me down. You know, you don't have any O-levels, you don't have any A-levels, you don't have any GCSEs, and there's a part that used to scream in me that I'm not stupid, I'm just operating differently from the academic side. And I started writing poetry as part of my voice of expression, and I used to do lots of creative things in lunch breaks, like do facials on people. I was, you know, always sort of entrepreneurially minded. And I would say one of the biggest lessons in my life that really sort of opened up the doors for me realizing I was a healer was my marriage. I was married for 14 years. That was, I would say, an emotionally abusive marriage. And then the other major experience was, I was homeless briefly, and then journeying with my late sister with cancer. Those three situations really, really sort of defined and identified the wounded healer within me, but also the wounded healer who could reach out into the lives of others, because I've been in many, many places. And so I may not fully understand where you've been, but I could walk by your side as I support you through your process because of where I've been.
Yes. Wow. Everyone comes through the fire, and you know, we learn, we grow. Some people don't grow, or they want to grow and they don't know how to make the first steps. And I think what you do is helping people to recognize not to be stuck in the pain or stuck in the confusion. And I think at first I was going to ask you, who are your clients? What types of people come to you? And but it seems that everybody goes through some sort of crossroads, but not everyone recognizes it.
That's right. I mean, in the background, I support a lot of young single mothers. You know, they're mothers that are trying to bring up their kids the best they can, but a lot of them are coming from really broken places. And so it's how they can really identify the stuff that they're carrying that's influencing or impacting on their life and therefore their children's lives. And then also on the other side, what's really nice, you know, a lot of men talk to me and open up as well, because, you know, a lot of men don't. They find it hard to open up because society often dictates that men don't cry and men don't live and men don't. And I'm like, you know what? You know, men communicate differently, but they equally need a place to go. They equally need a place to express, and a safe place, a place that where they won't be judged. I remember last year a friend reached out to me. He goes, I just want to talk. But he goes, I don't want to talk in an environment where there's men, where they're full of their ego, where they're going to be laughing about men don't cry. He generally was in a place that if I don't talk, I'm going to pop. And so we had a really great conversation, and I set up a group, and they went off and ran it. The other side of what I deal with are people who've been through domestic violence or some sort of abuse, because abuse is, I would say, sometimes it's off the scale. And so what I do is, you know, it's about creating a safe environment by just meeting the person, and then they would be able to feel my energy and know if they can work with me or not. Because when you start to tunnel down into situations of abuse, you have to really hold that space really tightly and grounded for a lot of people. You don't, for me, I always say I don't rescue, I support, because there's a very fine line.
Absolutely, yes. I noticed that for the magazine, in terms of giving people information that's going to help and support them, Esther, that a lot of the interviews that I've seen have been with some of our older artists, R&B artists, classic artists, and you did just go see Martha and the Vandellas. And, you know, I interviewed artists for many years as an entertainment journalist myself, and I love hearing the old stories and the things that they went through, particularly because many of them were starting out their careers when I was still a child or before. So it's always fascinating to me to hear how they lived their lives and the things that were rules then that are not rules now, how music was made. But I think, as you pointed out earlier, that if they can do it, so can we. And they've come through their own fire. Do you think that entertainers and media can really give us something as value, a value to learn in our lives that we can take and use?
I believe they can. And I guess it's the whole sort of perception or concept of entertainment and media, because nowadays, and, you know, I put this in inverted brackets, you know, entertainment and media, it's all quite superficial. And for me, a lot of these artists bring substance. And I usually say celebrity to me means, you know, celebrating an authentic life. You know, different strokes for different blokes. But I really do feel that a lot of these guys really set their careers, or their paths were built on, you know, platforms of values and substance and essence. And it's those sort of attributes that empowered and enabled them to go through so much of what they did have to go through, especially, you know, some of them coming from the deep South and having, you know, real major experiences that's really informed who they are now. And so, you know, those experiences have built really strong backs. And I guess if you equate that sometimes to more of the reality TV stuff that's going on now, you know, everything's very superficial, everything's very fickle, and, you know, they cry at a whim. Whereas these guys, they've been through some rock-solid experiences. I interviewed Mud Waters Jr. last week, the blues artist, and he talks about the blues, and he goes, I had to go and find my blues, which means he had to go through some real deep experiences in order to sing the blues.
Absolutely, yep. Well, this brings me to, because so many of us are influenced by messages that we're getting, images, storylines, stereotypes from media in terms of movies and television. And so my show, Words on Flicks, I'm always reviewing movies, talking about movies, talking about the movies that have influenced me. So I'm wondering, if you are a movie fan, do you get to go to the cinema much?
On occasion, but you mentioned one of the movies that I saw. Is it Black Klansman? I saw that when I was in the States in September. Absolutely amazing. I was like, I got to go see that again. I was so, because there were so many messages in there. I'm a bit like a child when I go to the movies, Janine, but also I'm a bit like the old woman, whereas I'm very excited and I'm very animated, but also I see the deeper meaning in things. And that was a really powerful film, but also just the performances were really, really powerful.
They really were.
The movies on occasion. Yeah, very powerful. And I mean, even if I go and see an animation, you know, I come away, I want to be Batman, I want to be Superman, I want to be Black, I want to be anything that's, I'm like a kid that way as well.
Esther, are you my twin? Because, you know, when I go to the movies, I feel like I'm so open to what's going on the screen.
Yeah.
I really love narratives, characterizations, how people manage things in film. I think there's some part of our culture where, you know, we learn how to behave to some degree from what we see in the movies. Even if it's bad behavior, we thrill to the bad behavior because we wish we could do that. Or we get confronted with a situation and we say, oh, I remember I saw this actor or actress say this, and I thought that was clever when they were in this situation. Or this is how they behaved in whether it was a seduction or a fight or managing a work situation. We're influenced by these images. So I'm kind of the same way. And so just to get back to Black Klansman, you know, Denzel Washington's son, John David Washington, he really, his portrayal was just astonishing because he was brave. You know, he was brave. The character was brave to integrate that police force and to confront the largest organized racist organization in this country. So I thought it was a really powerful movie, and that it was Spike Lee directing it,
I
like him. I respect his movies, but I can't say I don't. I like all of his movies, but this one I thought was really great. So,
yes. Because I guess Spike Lee always pushes his movies about, very strong messages, but also he pushes, stereotypes, he pushes convention, he pushes through, I believe, in order to make people think, and sometimes there's a little bit of, I'm going to turn the knife a little bit just to get a response and see what you guys are really going to do. That's what I feel about. Yeah.
Yeah. He likes to give us a lesson as well as a story.
That's right.
I think that's great. Right. Did you actually get a chance to see Black Panther?
I saw that this year. I mean, I might get shot for this. I mean, I've got to be careful. I liked the film because everyone was talking about the clothing, the colors, I'm just getting a bit tired now, apologies. The dress, for want of a better word. I thought it was okay. I wasn't particularly moved by it. And just bear with me. I mean, I take my hat off because it was an all-black cast, and you know, it's done incredibly well, and it's made a stand. But I was a little bored, and I had to sort of really step back and see, maybe I'm not a Marvel person.
It was okay.
Yeah, and I think what I was
trying
to.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I think it's just the connection. Apologies. I think what I was really trying not to get caught up in is because it was an all-black cast and it was an all-black movie and all those variables, you know, was I going to champion it because of that? Or was I, for me, I was just going to sit down to watch a movie and give it credit on how I felt at seeing that movie. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense to me, and I think that is something that we tend to do as people of color. We want to rally around a story that has so many of our actors and showcases so many of our film skill, black director, black costume designer. And sometimes we will rally around it, even if it isn't artistically the best, and that may be controversial to say, but I agree with you in that sense. And if it didn't connect with you, that's fine. You know, we're all entitled to our own opinion, and it was hard for me to kind of get into it at first because I'm not a comic book fan. I'm not like a Marvel Universe person, so that's fair. So let me ask you another question, Esther. Being that you are a person of color living in the UK, do you think that there have been enough films that really capture the experience of being a black person in Britain?
I would say that I am not the right person to ask that. Firstly, I don't think I can qualify. No, but I don't think I can qualify to give an answer because I don't believe I've watched enough black films or am aware of it to make to make a comment. And also, I believe
enough.
The American. I feel that the American film industry, you know, we're still greatly influenced, and a lot of films that I've seen are, you know, out of America. So I really can't make a comment on that.
Okay, let me switch completely and ask you a more lighthearted question about Mary Poppins. Okay. So Mary Poppins is like a distinctly English character, right? She was the subject of a series of books written in the 1930s by P.L. Travers. I read the books when I was a little kid, and they were super old then, and I'm old. So then Walt Disney Studios came along and prettied her up, you know, in 1964. Yeah. And Americans went crazy. You know, we love our Mary Poppins. And now we have a sequel coming this Christmas with Emily Blunt. So my question to you, you know, I'm just curious as to whether British people are as obsessed with Mary Poppins as Americans seem to be.
Oh, my days. You're asking another question. I would say that's another question I can't really answer as well. Mary Poppins, I remember watching it as a child, and she's someone, it's interesting you brought up Mary Poppins, she's someone that I reference to when I'm doing my talks, because I always talk about what's in your Mary Poppins toolkit. But in terms of how British people feel about Mary Poppins and the film, because I'm not sort of really in that world to make a comment.
Well, I'm thinking about her as popular culture. You know, I'm assuming, and maybe I'm assuming wrong, that certain characters just become part of the lore. Like, you know, Winnie the Pooh, I'm imagining, is as beloved in the UK as he is here.
Yeah, I would say Winnie the Pooh, from my perspective, is more, because I've actually got a Winnie the Pooh teddy bear that belongs to my late sister. So I would say Winnie the Pooh more than Mary Poppins.
Okay, that's fair. So just to kind of wrap up, because I know you're getting kind of sleepy because it's quite late there. I looked at a couple of your interviews and I like the question that you posed to your interview subjects, which is kind of, and I'm probably paraphrasing, which is in a nutshell or a crab shell or a peanut shell, who is Esther Austin?
Put me on the spot now. Who is Esther Austin? I would say, gosh, now I know why it's so difficult sometimes to answer. Right. I would say I'm a universal soul who's constantly evolving, constantly growing, constantly seeking, constantly searching, full of adventure, full of creativity, and just someone who just wants to go out there and reach out to humanity to say it's possible. And just to allow life to be an adventure. So that's me in a nutshell. Become the adventure.
Awesome.
Become your adventure.
So
yeah, I think that sums it up.
People can get more information about you and your company at EstherAustinGlobal.net? No.
Com.
EstherAustinGlobal.com. Yes.
Right,
and
yeah.
Your show, Esther, on the Sofa with Esther, will premiere here on Saturday, January 5th, and come on every other Saturday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and 8 p.m. British Standard Time. And what can we expect? What type of show?
Ooh.
And then we'll... Yes.
Okay. I would say the show is going to be about transforming and empowering lives. There's lots of great interviews, lots of great music, because music is incredibly healing and uplifting. And basically, the show is to encourage and to motivate and then to inspire you into living the best life ever, because life is so challenging. Trust me, life is so challenging. But when you can find those little nuggets of gold in, whether it's through interviews or even for your own life, and also to help you think outside the box, take risks, do something different, live. That's what the show is about.
I love it. I love it. Well, welcome to the eWater Radio show family, and I'm so excited that you're going to be joining us, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart for calling in the wee hours of the morning from the UK, and I'm looking forward to hearing your show. So thank you so much, Esther, and happy Christmas. And
thank you, Janine.
Hope
thank
to talk
you for
to
having
you
me
again
on
soon.
Brilliant.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to give you a British hug up now. Let's just have a British squeeze. Ready? Here we go.
Oh, yes.
Got it?
All right. Good night, Esther.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. So that was Esther Austin. Wasn't she delightful? I really enjoyed talking to her. And, you know, I'm always excited when I talk to people who are doing new and different things, and not just new and different, but supporting other people in the world, because we need that. We need someone to talk to about our issues, to talk to about how to move forward, because sometimes we do get stuck. And I can say that I'm someone who has often gotten stuck with what direction to go in. You know, our society, our culture moves so fast. There's so many directions to go in. Sometimes I can even get overwhelmed with what direction, what path do I follow? And even starting the Words on Flicks podcast this year was a choice that I made almost against my better judgment, because I'm someone who doesn't necessarily like change. Well, who really likes change? Some people really do. They embrace it. But I'm someone who kind of likes to get settled in what I'm doing and then get better and better and better at what I'm doing. But the world isn't like that. So Esther is really inspiring in the things that she does. And so I encourage you again to listen to her show and to check out her website as well. I mean, she has some great information on there in terms of supporting personal change and growth. She has interviews on there. And then she has pictures of her style. Like, she has this great personal style, very colorful, very expressive. And so if you're into expressing yourself through your clothing and jewelry, you're really going to get something good out of that. So this is the Words on Flicks show with Janine Coveney. I want to remind you that the show will return on January 3rd at its usual time. I'd like to once again thank you for coming along with me on this journey, Words on Flicks. There may be a few changes, not many, but I these couple of weeks off will give me some time to kind of tweak the show so that we get to talk more about movies and people who make movies and people who act in movies and people who write movies, so we can analyze a little bit more of that. And of course, I'll still be doing my blog, the Words on Flicks blog, where there'll be reviews and analysis of new movies and older movies as well, because I love classic cinema. So that will be available. And right now, I'd like to wish you a very happy, peaceful, joyful holiday season. In some ways, it seems like it's been a really long year, but in another way, it seems like, boom, we got to December really quick. So make this holiday a good one. Spread cheer wherever you go. And be glad to see another holiday. I know some of us have gotten here without some of our loved ones, and that can make us sad at holiday time. But I believe that if you have faith, they wouldn't want you to be sad. They would want you to celebrate and be joyful. So once again, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy New Year, and I will see you, or you will hear me, I hope, in 2019. So thanks again. Have a great night. Bye-bye.